You're listening to Greater LA, the show from KCRW that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiotakis. For generations, Hollywood celebrities have seen Palm Springs as a glamorous desert escape. And legend has it that one of the biggest stars of the 20th century was discovered in that little desert town. Marilyn Monroe, Norma Jean Baker.
A kiss on the hand may be quite continental, but diamonds are a girl's best friend.
In real life, the iconic actress was about 5'5" when she wasn't wearing heels. But a sculpture of the star that passed through Palm Springs a while back had her at 26 feet tall, with heels. That's about the height of a three-story house. Known as Forever Marilyn, the statue by Seward Johnson depicts her in a scene from The Seven-Year Itch. You know the scene.
Ooh, do you feel the breeze from the subway? Isn't it delicious?
White dress, billowing skirt, and an indelible image.
Sort of cools the ankles, doesn't it?
Well, Johnson's 2011 statue has toured the world, including a two-year stint in Palm Springs almost a decade ago. And now the desert resort city is going to be Forever Marilyn's forever home. The sculpture became the hotspot of downtown Palm Springs the last time it was there. But while some like it hot, others are giving its return a chilly reception. And they're voicing concerns about where it and that famously windswept skirt are going to go in town. KCRW's Matt Gillum picks up the saga of the statue here.
A quick history lesson before we begin. Palm Springs and the real Marilyn Monroe go way back. Along with apparently being discovered at the famed Racquet Club, she briefly lived in a bungalow in town, and the desert oasis is where a tryst between her and President Kennedy purportedly took place. Those Palm Springs roots, platinum blonde of course, run deep. So much so, a tourism group in town has spent $1 million on the towering statue to return it to the desert. During Forever Marilyn's first run here, from 2012 to 2014, she became an early must-have social media backdrop and kept a steady stream of tourists flowing into Nona Watson's office.
Almost everybody that came in during that time came in for Marilyn. They wanted information about her. They wanted to know how she got here, how long she was going to stay. Years after she left, we still got calls.
Nona is the longtime CEO of the Palm Springs Chamber of Commerce. Just like the throngs of visitors who came to see the giant statue, she too made a point of posing with Marilyn.
We did staff pictures under her. I've done family pictures under her when she was in the Marilyn Park. We invited everybody to come and take a picture with Marilyn because it's just she's so big.
The size of the sculpture makes it novel, but there's something more to its popularity. It just belongs here, says Nona. She thinks the town's reputation as a place that welcomes free spirits and its long connection to Hollywood line up with Marilyn.
She fit all that, being a little bit different, being beautiful, you know, big blonde, big presence, big personality. That's all Palm Springs.
With the pandemic waning and the slow summer months on the horizon, the chairman of a local hospitality organization figures Marilyn will give the town's already nicely humming economy an extra jolt.
This is the ideal time to jumpstart back our economy, make the people happy, because she is a huge attraction, a huge magnet.
Aftab Dada is a managing director at the Palm Springs Hilton, where we're sitting. He's also head of PS Resorts, the Palm Springs hotel lobby group that spent a cool million to buy Forever Marilyn. They'll shell out even more to get her here and assembled. The overhead costs may be steep, he says.
But at the end of the day, I can tell you that she's going to bring a lot of smiles. She's going to bring in a lot of traffic. She's going to be an extremely contributing to our economy, and that's the name of the game is.
But if everybody were welcoming this big blonde, there wouldn't be much of a story to tell. Some aren't smiling about the statue that depicts that famously blowing skirt and reveals a panty-clad backside. In March, a scathing LA Times article christened the sculpture Me Too Marilyn. The name was picked up by a Change.org petition last month calling to, quote, stop the misogynist Me Too Marilyn statue in Palm Springs. Tens of thousands of people have signed it. Elizabeth Armstrong, a former director of the Palm Springs Art Museum, is a spokesperson for the petition effort.
It's offensive to be upskirting a 26-foot tall woman, okay? It's sexist. You know, it's shocking to me, and now I think to 25,000 other people who signed the petition, that a few town fathers don't see the offensiveness of it.
The statue's last stint in the city was well before the Me Too movement shined a glaring spotlight on sexism and sexual harassment. The petition calls the prominent display of this likeness of Marilyn in 2021 ill-conceived and tone-deaf. Back in November, when the Palm Springs City Council was weighing where to put the statue, Councilmember Lisa Middleton reflected on its first go-round and said, while not her taste, it's just something light.
We in this city are incredibly sensitive to how things are perceived, and the perception on the ground was that this was simply a fun statue that brought smiles to people's faces.
You can't litigate taste. However, you can legally fight the placement of something, and now that's a separate battle being waged against Forever Marilyn. The city plans for her to go in the middle of a new road connecting the Palm Springs Art Museum to the town's main drag, Palm Canyon Drive. But the museum doesn't want her posterior roughly 435 feet from its front doors. Its outgoing director, Louis Grachos, addressed the city council in November. He said the location in front of the museum would be especially detrimental to the thousands of school-aged children who visit.
The thought of those kids leaving our museum and having the first thing they see is the undergarments and underwear of this enormous Marilyn sculpture would be highly offensive.
Even though the museum was unenthused about the site of unmentionables, the city council, after expressing hesitation about the location, did eventually agree to a temporary 3-year trial run. Here's Councilmember Dennis Woods.
It is kitschy and it does kind of fit Palm Springs to a great degree, and I think it's worth a go. I just think you just need an eye.
We're walking to where the statue will likely go, right in the middle of Museum Way. A 2-foot-tall concrete plinth is already in the roadway awaiting its arrival. Showing me the spot are the people fighting against it.
It's called CREMA, the Committee to Relocate Marilyn. And actually, what we want to happen is for her to go back to her long-planned location, which is only 100 steps from where we're standing, in the downtown park that is under construction right here.
Acclaimed fashion designer Trina Turk is trying to get the statue moved. She argues that the Palm Springs Art Museum's crisp mid-century lines should be visible along Museum Way so you can see the architecturally significant building that was
designed by E. Stuart Williams. He's one of the most famous mid-century modern architects who'd worked in Palm Springs. And the whole purpose of the street was so that there would be an unobstructed sight line from Palm Canyon Drive to the museum, and Marilyn would block that.
Her CREMA partner Chris Menrad echoes the sentiment.
It's really going to dominate the view, the sight lines of not just the museum, which is, you know, historically important, but also our beautiful mountains right behind it.
Remember, this is Palm Springs, a city known worldwide for its architecture. So in this town, sight lines and the designed landscape are part of the draw. CREMA scored an early victory at the end of March and got a temporary restraining order to prevent further work on the sculpture, but a judge tossed that out in early April. The path is clear for construction on the statue to begin ASAP, but Marilyn hasn't arrived yet, and that means more time to strategize about legal next steps, says Chris.
It is a go now, but it's not here now, and it's not coming for a while, so we have that time to work things out.
No matter what, Palm Springs is about to scratch its Marilyn itch after 7 years. The statue is definitely coming. PS Resorts hopes to have it in place before Memorial Day. Aftab Dada, the head of the organization, is surprised by all this fuss over the statue. He says the kitschy colossus is meant to be the stuff of Instagram, not coffee table books.
She's an attraction, in our opinion. She's not an art. And she makes majority of the people very happy. The photos taken being transmitted all over the world will do nothing but benefit the city and the residents of Palm Springs.
For now, it remains to be seen whether Forever Marilyn will put the bomb in Bombshell or be one more jewel for Palm Springs. For KCRW, I'm Matt Gillum.
A kiss on the hand may be quite continental, but diamonds are a girl's best friend. A kiss may be grand, but it won't pay the rental.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Moving on now with this episode of KCRW's Greater LA, I'm Steve Chiotakis. As of today, LA County has hit benchmarks to enter the least restrictive yellow tier. Bars are set to open indoors with limited capacity. Restaurants can up their capacity to 50%. Things are starting to look more and more, well, like they did before the pandemic. So how are you doing? Maybe you're getting an invitation to a small gathering or going out to dinner with friends that you haven't seen in a year. And that's exciting for sure, and it's terrifying for sure at the same time. Maybe you're a little rusty on how to socialize altogether. And how do all these sorts of bubbling emotions manifest? How do you deal with them as you face the old, new world? To answer that, we brought in our friend Dawn Delgado. She's a therapist here in L.A. dealing with marriage and family, also anxiety and trauma, at her practice on L.A.'s West Side. Dawn, welcome back to the program.
Hi, Steve. Thanks so much for having me back.
We knew exactly who to call. First off, it is Mental Health Awareness Month. And before we get into the sort of, you know, first day of school emotions that a lot of folks are feeling, I think of like the Sunday scaries, right? Before you have to go back to work, that little knot in your stomach. I want to ask you about the stigma that's often associated with mental health. I mean, there is still a lot of stigma, right? And why is that?
You know, I believe that the stigma is diminishing. I believe that we're entering a new era where people are aware that mental health is not just a topic or a subject matter for some people. It's for everyone. We all know someone who's impacted by mental health challenges, or we're impacted ourselves. So I might be a little idealistic, but I do believe that we're in a new era where that stigma has been diminishing.
What are you hearing? So let's get back into the, you know, trying to re-enter society, right, and be more social as we are. I believe many of us are social beasts. What are you hearing most from people about returning to some semblance of normalcy?
Yeah, so I'm hearing with my clientele, I'm hearing mixed reactions. There's kind of a spectrum of excitement and this bubbling up feeling of anticipation, kind of like the roaring 20s when everyone was ready to get back out and dance and socialize and shop and come together. And at the same time, there's a lot of anxiety. There's a buzz in the air, and that is increasing the anxiety. There's some social overstimulation and questions about social awkwardness, how to interact in this new kind of normal that may never be normal again. So I'm hearing a lot of exhaustion with normal types of social interactions. People are reporting just being wiped out after a normal gathering or interaction with friends. So there's really a mixed bag of reactions, and I think they're all normal for your experience and whatever you dealt with this past year.
It's almost as if, because so many folks have been alone for a while or just in their quote unquote pods, that you forget how to make chit chat in a social situation, right? You haven't been around a whole lot of people of late. And so those social situations can be a little awkward. I mean, what kind of advice would you give to someone who says, I don't remember how to do it, or I'm really uncomfortable getting out there with other people?
Yeah, it's hard to know how close to stand, what to talk about. It's normal right now for conversations to gravitate towards vaccines and the pandemic and COVID. And normal chit-chat just seems a little odd at this point with what we've all experienced. So my advice is really just to take it slow, be kind and gentle, and ask questions about how people want to engage and interact versus just jumping into a pre-pandemic type of interacting.
Let's talk about the apparatus that you have in front of you, which would be your phone or your computer or whatever it is. How do you break up with that device and try and get back into the socializing scheme?
That's a really great question. How to break up with your Zoom account and to integrate back with real live people. I think it's got to be a gradual process. I think we're needing to ease back in to those interactions. And yes, we need to fully dress head to toe now and pay attention to one another when we're talking. There's an impact that those virtual platforms have had on us and our level of interacting. We can mute ourselves whenever we want. We can turn off the video and be less accountable to the interaction. And now part of what might be exhausting people is that as we re-enter face-to-face social contact, we need to retrain ourselves to be present in the moment with people that we're interacting with.
There are experts, Dawn, who are saying that reaching herd immunity, there was a big article in the New York Times, kind of got me dreading the end of this because it's like, will there ever be an end to this? But that herd immunity in the U.S. is unlikely because there's vaccine resistance. But there's also more of a focus on, like having the fewest number of hospitalizations, fewest number of deaths, that this is certainly manageable. That we're going to be okay in the long run. It's just going to be something that we deal with from now on. Does that add to the anxiety that's out there, do you think? And do you think the idea that COVID's going to be around for a lot longer will have sort of a negative impact on mental health?
Absolutely. I think we're at a juncture where we're looking to integrate this pandemic into our daily lives. At the beginning, you and I and the listeners, we really hoped for a quick and final exit from the pandemic. And as things have, lasted over this past year, it does really look like we're moving towards integrating this reality into our future lives. So, we are all going to be coping with that. And there are, again, a variety of different stress levels and anxiety levels related to that. Some people are still tracking numbers and watching the news, day to day and have an extreme reaction to that. And others may now feel like we're kind of back into the normal or maybe even wanting to use avoidance, not to think about the numbers and the impact. So again, it's just going to be part of our lives at this point, maybe not the finish line that we were all hoping for when this pandemic started.
Dawn Delgado, licensed marriage and family therapist who also deals with anxiety and trauma. Dawn, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Steve. Take good care.
This is Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Muslims throughout Southern California and the world are observing Ramadan. That's the holy month of fasting and prayer and family gatherings. Well, one thing it typically doesn't include, because it's a pandemic, is getting vaccinated. Well, one community organizer in Orange County is using a much beloved item, a taco, to help.
My mother used to say, always look for the helpers. Anybody who is coming into a place where there's a tragedy.
Oh, baby, have a help. All I need is my brother.
Because if you look for the helpers, you'll know that there's hope.
Raida Hamida is executive director and founder of Latino Muslim Unity. She's hard at work right now, as a matter of fact, bringing mobile COVID vaccination units and halal taco trucks to mosques all around OC. Raida, welcome.
Salam alaikum.
Yes, you have been bringing taco trucks to mosques ever since before the pandemic. Why? And why tacos?
When we
organized our communities to visit Little Arabia in 2016 to do a tour to invite Latinos into our Arab-owned restaurants. We noticed that, you know, there was a lot of disconnects with the Latino and Muslim community. While we live side by side, we didn't really know one another. And one of the things that I really wanted to do was to empower our community since we were neighbors, especially with the anti-Muslim and anti-Latino rhetoric that was out there that was demoralizing and dehumanizing our community during the Trump campaign. I wanted to really give back with our food because everybody loves Arab cuisine. They love the Mexican cuisine. And one of the things we need to do is also love the people.
I wonder, you're now trying to get people vaccinated, though, because we're in this time, right? We're trying to move beyond this pandemic. How is that going?
The Muslim community is a little anxious about getting vaccinated during their fasting hours, although it is permitted by Islam for them to be vaccinated during their fast from actually dusk to sunset. A lot of folks were really hesitant to do that. And so I wanted to make sure that we met the Muslim community that where they were at the Islamic Center. But because these Islamic centers are in the central areas of Latino neighborhoods in Orange County, we wanted to invite our Latino neighbors to also get vaccinated because these are like the hardest hit areas. And so we really felt that, you know, we're using this moment to really protect our communities and save lives by halal tacos. But more than that, really give that experience that this is a celebratory experience. We're congratulating people when they get vaccinated. We're telling them we're proud of them.
How many people do you think you've helped get vaccinated, Raida?
Oh, hundreds.
Hundreds?
We have helped hundreds of people. Even right before Ramadan, I had to educate the healthcare agency in Orange County about how important it was to get people vaccinated before Ramadan. But, you know, helping them understand that, like, we were not given the message that was culturally relevant to our community and inviting us to get vaccinated. It was a very passive message. And, you know, everyone has access to the public information that's out there about vaccinations, but a lot of these communities are not involved with social media. They're not engaged. They don't see what's going on.
Help us spread the word because you're going to have another event coming up this Saturday, right? Tell us where that'll be.
So that's going to be at the West Coast Islamic Society in Little Arabia. It's a very small mosque, but it has a big message because they're opening their doors to everyone, including the Latino community that are across the street to get vaccinated. I personally want to invite everyone to share a taco, a halal taco. We're social distancing. We're wearing our masks. But we're also celebrating this holy month to reflect and to really be with one another during this time so that we don't feel alone and we do have hope because we really got to give a little faith in this process.
Yeah.
And our faith really compels us to do this work, especially during this time.
I want to thank you for your time and talking to us about it. Raida Hamida, the executive director and founder of Latino Muslim Unity and the brains behind Taco Trucks at Every Mosque. That's a hashtag, by the way. Thanks for coming on and talking to us, Raida.
Thank you so much for having us. And have a taco while you're at it.
I'm totally down with that idea, by the way.
Tacos for everyone. That's going to do it for us today. Tomorrow, our series on the history of the streets of L.A. continues. A look at Hollywood Boulevard. Hooray! It's KCRW's Drive to the Future. We're celebrating that, too, where your support goes beyond public radio. Support KCRW, and part of your donation will help provide legal aid for people experiencing homelessness. That's a challenge for many of L.A.'s most vulnerable. KCRW.com/give to help. You'll be helping us and the community, too. And if you donate by midnight tonight, your donation could turn $25,000 into $50,000, thanks to the Hillenburg family. So we're starting out with a bang as well. KCRW's Drive to the Future. Jenna Cagle, Catherine Barnes, Sonia Guys, PJ Shahamad, Ray Guarna, Mario Saavedra, Phil Richards, Amy Tom, Mike Vogel, Sue Margulies, and Christian Bordahl all had hands on the show. My name is Steve Chiotakis, thanking you for your ears and for your time. Have a great night.